It began in the little house of Mrs. Carpole, up at Bleakridge. Mrs. Carpole was the second Mrs. Carpole, and her husband was dead. She had a stepson, Horace, and a son of her own, Sidney. Horace is the hero, or the villain, of this history. On the day when the unfortunate affair began, he was 19 years old and a model youth. Not only was he getting on in business, not only did he give his evenings to the study of the chemistry of pottery, but he also found time, even at that tender age, to pay his tailor's bill promptly and to fold his trousers in the same crease every night, so that he always looked neat and dignified. But, strange to say, he made no friends. Sidney was quite a different story. His years were then 8. Fair-haired and blue-eyed, he had a smile and a scowl that were equally effective in tyrannizing, and he was beloved by everybody. Unhappily, his health was not good. He caught every disease that happened to be about, and nearly died of each one. His latest acquisition had been scarlet fever. Now, one afternoon, after he had peeled, and his room had been disinfected, and he was beginning to walk again, Horace came home and decided that Sidney should be brought downstairs for tea as a treat, and that he, Horace, would carry him downstairs. Mrs. Carpole was delighted with the idea, and Sidney also, except that Sidney didn't want to be carried downstairs. He wanted to walk down. Horace, nevertheless, was determined to carry Sidney, and carry Sidney he did, despite warnings and kickings. At least, he carried him as far as the turn in the steep stairs, at which point he fell, and Sidney with him. The half-brothers arrived on the floor in company, but Horace, with his 11 stone 2, was on top, and the poor, suffering little convalescent lay insensible. It took the doctor 40 minutes to bring him to, but in a couple of hours he seemed to be perfectly himself. Horace breathed again, and thanked heaven it was no worse. His gratitude to heaven was, however, slightly premature, for in the black middle of the night, poor Sidney was seized with excruciating pains in the head. Then Horace said that Mrs. Carpole should take Sidney to Buxton for a fortnight, and he paid all the expenses of the trip out of his savings. Horace was desolated, utterly stricken. He said he should never forgive himself. Sidney improved, slowly. After several months, Sidney was judged sufficiently strong to go to school, and Horace accompanied him on the opening day of the term, and left the young, delicate sprig to the care of his masters and the mercy of his companions. But Sidney came home for dinner weeping, and by the evening another of those terrible attacks had supervened. School being impossible for him, Sidney had intermittent instruction at home, but he learnt practically nothing except the banjo. Horace had to buy him a banjo. It cost him the best part of a 10-pound note. Still, Horace could do no less. Sidney's general health certainly improved, yet not completely. He spent a month or 6 weeks every year in the expensive, bracing atmosphere of some seaside resort, and altogether he was decidedly a heavy drain on Horace's resources. People were aware of this, and they said that Horace ought to be happy that he was in a position to spend money freely on his poor brother. Further, wasn't Sidney's sad condition slowly killing his mother? And, as a fact, Mrs. Carpole did die. She died of quinsy, doubtless aggravated by Sidney's sad condition. Not long afterwards, Horace came into a small fortune from his maternal grandfather. But poor Sidney didn't come into any fortune, and somehow people illogically inferred that Horace had not behaved quite nicely in coming into a fortune, while his suffering invalid brother, whom he had so deeply harmed, came into nothing. Even Horace had compunctions, and with part of the fortune he bought a house with a large garden up at Toft End, the highest hill of the hilly Five Towns, so that Sidney might have the benefit of the air. With the remainder of the fortune, he obtained a partnership in the firm of earthenware manufacturers, for whom he had been acting as highly paid manager. Sidney reached the age of 18, and the question of his future arose. He had inclinations towards art, and had already amused himself by painting some beautiful vases. So it was settled that he should enter Horace's works on the art side, with a view of becoming ultimately art director. But the change of life upset the youth's health again. After only 2 visits to the works, he had a grave recurrence of the head attacks, and he was solemnly exhorted not to apply himself too closely to business. It was some time later that Horace met Ella. She was the nicest girl he had ever met with, because her charming niceness included a faculty of being really serious about serious things, and yet she could be deliciously gay. In short, she was a revelation to Horace. Ella was staying with Mrs. Pinkethman, the widowed headmistress of the Wesleyan Day School, who was her cousin. Now, at this period, Horace was rather lonely in his large house and garden, for Sidney, in pursuit of health, had gone off on a 6 weeks' cruise round Holland, Finland, Norway, and Sweden. Horace had offered him the trip, and Horace was also paying his weekly salary as usual. So Horace, who had always been friendly with Mrs. Pinkethman, grew now more than ever friendly with Mrs. Pinkethman, and Mrs. Pinkethman and Ella were inseparable. Horace was, as they say in Bursley, knocked silly by Ella. And the inexplicable thing was that she looked up to him. She evidently admired him. So, one Saturday afternoon, Horace actually got these 2 women up to tea in his house. And, as the day was quite warm, tea was served in the garden. There was no restraint, no awkwardness. Ella talked with an ease and a distinction that enchanted Horace. Then there was the sound of cab wheels on the other side of the garden wall, and presently Horace heard the housekeeper complimenting Sidney on his good looks. The golden youth had returned without the slightest warning from his cruise. The trio, at the lower end of the garden, saw him standing in the porch, tanned, curly, graceful and young. Horace half rose and then sat down again. Ella stared hard. "That must be your brother," she said. "Yes, that's Sid," Horace answered. "He does look delicate," said Ella under her breath. These were nearly the last words that she spoke to Horace that afternoon. The introduction was made, and Sidney slipped into the party as comfortably as he slipped into everything. But nevertheless, Ella talked no more. She just stared at Sidney and listened to him. Horace was proud that Sidney had made such an impression on her. He was glad that she showed no aversion to Sidney, because, in the event of Horace's marriage, where would Sidney live if not with Horace and Horace's wife? At the conclusion of the festivity, the 2 women naturally could not be permitted to walk home alone. And, naturally also, the 4 could not walk abreast on the narrow pavements. Horace went first with Mrs. Pinkethman. Horace was over 30, and Mrs. Pinkethman was also over 30. Whereas Sidney was 21, and so was Ella. Hence, Sidney walked behind with Ella. Horace did not look round too often. That would not have been quite proper. But whenever he did look round, the other couple had lagged farther and farther behind. And they arrived at Mrs. Pinkethman's 1/4 hour after their elders. The wedding of Sidney and Ella cost Horace a large sum of money, for he practically furnished their home for them out of his own pocket. It was not to be expected that Sidney should have resources, and although he did no more work at the manufactory, Horace paid him £8 a week. In point of fact, the earthenware manufactory was not going well. Crushed by German competition, Horace needed every penny that he could collect. Then Ella received an inheritance, and Sidney and she had some £20,000 to play with. They left Horace in Bursley and went to Llandudno for a spell. Horace saw them off at the station, as an elder brother should, and tipped the porters. Certainly he was relieved of the formality of paying £8 a week to his brother, but now it was no longer a question of £8 a week. It was a question of final ruin. Being absolutely honest, Horace called his creditors together while he could yet pay them £20 in the pound. It was a noble act, but he received no praise for it. So, having settled his affairs in this humdrum, idiotic manner, Horace took a third-class return to Llandudno and related his misfortunes to Sidney as airily as he could. And Sidney said he was awfully sorry and had no notion how matters stood. And could he do anything for Horace? No, said Horace. I'm all right. I've very fortunately got an excellent place as manager in a big new manufactory in Germany. This is how we deal with German competition in the Five Towns. Germany, cried Sidney. Yes, said Horace. I start the day after tomorrow. He said goodbye and left for Bonn on the Rhine. A few months later, Horace's house and garden at Toft End were put up to auction, and Sidney was struck with the idea of buying the place. Ella said that the idea of buying it was a charming one, because it was in the garden that she had first met her Sidney. So the place was duly bought, and Sidney and Ella went to live there. Several years elapsed. Then one day, little Horace was informed that his uncle Horace, whom he had never seen, was coming to the house on a visit, and that he must be a good boy and polite to his uncle, and all the usual sort of thing. And Horace the elder did arrive that afternoon. Sidney met him, smiling, easy and elegant as usual. And Horace was jocularly ushered upstairs into the nursery and introduced to his nephew. Ella had changed. She was no longer slim, and no longer gay and serious by turns. She narrowly missed being stout, and she was continuously gay, like Sidney. The child was also gay. Everybody was glad to see Horace, but nobody seemed deeply interested in Horace's affairs. As a fact, he had done rather well in Germany, and had now come back to England in order to assume a working partnership in a small potting concern at Hanbridge. But he might have come in from the next street and left them only yesterday, for all the curiosity they exhibited. "Shall we go down to the drawing-room and have tea, eh?" said Ella. "Yes, let's go and kill the fatted calf," said Sidney. "You carry me downstairs, Unky," the little nephew suggested, with an appealing glance at his new uncle. "No," said Horace. "I'm dashed if I do."